something I've said, regardless of who's doing it or the political orientation of those doing it. We know that in the United States, the overwhelming majority of politically motivated violence is perpetrated by the right, not by the left. Democrats did riots for 6 years. You're going to have to remind me about that. When there has been violence or criminality at whatever protest, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, anything, I say I'm against that. And if crimes have been committed, then people should be dealt with in the criminal justice system. And we saw nothing from them like what we saw on January 6th. So I hope that you weren't waiting too long. And I hope that I answered your question. Last one. You have a chance to see 2,000 mules, but I think you're, Y-O-U-R, afraid to watch. And read The Laptop from Hell, your president and his nasty son all over it. I have now talked about 2,000 mules three times. I think that is more than sufficient for how rigorous it is. Three times I've spoken about 2,000 mules. I have spoken about the Hunter Biden laptop now probably closer to six or seven times. I've basically said everything I think should be said about it based on what we know so far. If you think there's something specific that should be said that I haven't said, let me know. Maybe even call into the show. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com. That's P-A-K-M-A-N.com. To get instant access to the bonus show. You also get the daily podcast in either audio or video form, whichever form you prefer. When you are a member, that podcast full show is made available to you 5 or 6 hours earlier than we publish it to everybody else. And when we do our town hall events, you get priority access when you are a member. JoinPacman.com, coupon code BIGVOTING22. We will see you on the bonus show.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Folks, glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat. Fat Pete in Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm running for Congress.
There is no turning it around at this point. You've won.
Joining us now is Representative Gabrielle Giffords.
Gabby was a star.
If an idea is a good idea, it's a good idea.
Your fiancé, Mark Kelly, who is who?
He's an astronaut.
I was the commander of Space Shuttle Endeavor at the time. Gabby knew the risk involved. Turns out she had the risky job.
Congresswoman Giffords was the target of the mass shooting.
I have just come from the University Medical Center, where our friend Gabby courageously fights to recover.
Typically, with an injury to the brain with a gunshot wound, it's less than 10% that they would even survive.
She's beginning several months of rehab.
Give me two fingers.
All right.
Give me five.
Gabby suffered from aphasia, which is a language impairment.
Gabby Giffords won't back down. Today, as mass shootings continue to rock the country, we'll look at a new film premiering across the country. It follows the former Arizona congresswoman as she fights to recover from an attempted assassination in 2011, deals with aphasia, and emerges as one of the most eloquent activists in the U.S. battle against gun violence. We'll speak with the film's award-winning directors, Julie Cohen and Betsy West, makers of the films My Name is Pauli Murray and the Academy Award-nominated RBG. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Mass protests in Sri Lanka have forced the country's president and prime minister to agree to resign as the country faces a dire economic crisis. On Saturday, thousands of protesters stormed President Gotabaya Rajapaksa's home and set fire to the prime minister's residence. Protesters have vowed to keep occupying the president's home until he formally resigns. Many people were filmed swimming in the president's pool. Demonstrators condemn the president for living in luxury while Sri Lanka faces an economic crisis.
To get rid of the president and the prime minister and to have a new era for Sri Lanka. Also, I feel very, very sad that they didn't go earlier, because had they gone earlier, there wouldn't have been any destruction. And it's time that we got all our stolen money back to this country. And also, the air conditions are running in that presidential palace while people don't have electricity in their homes.
Voters in Japan went to the polls for a parliamentary election Sunday, 2 days after a gunman assassinated former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe while he was campaigning for a candidate. In Sunday's election, Abe's right-wing Liberal Democratic Party won in a landslide, gaining enough seats with its coalition partners to form a supermajority in the upper house. By picking up more seats, the LDP appears poised to rewrite the country's pacifist constitution, which bars Japan from using or threatening to use military force. The rewriting of the constitution was a longtime goal of Shinzo Abe, something he never accomplished while alive. Ukrainian officials say at least 18 people have died after Russian rockets hit a five-story apartment complex in the town of Chasiv Yar in the eastern Ukraine region of Donetsk. Rescuers say they fear two dozen people may be trapped in the rubble. Meanwhile, Ukraine's also accusing Russia of bombing a school and children's health center in Kharkiv. A meeting of foreign ministers of the G20 ended in Indonesia on Friday without any new agreements on the war in Ukraine. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov attended the talks and said he's open to negotiations with the West over Ukraine, but accused the United States of abandoning talks with Russia. At the meeting, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who refused to hold a formal meeting with Lavrov, accused Russia of not engaging in what he called meaningful diplomacy. The WNBA held its annual All-Star Game Sunday as one of its biggest superstars, Brittany Griner, remains locked up in a Russian jail. After halftime of Sunday's game, every player came out of the locker room wearing shirts with Griner's name and her number 42 on the back. ABC News is reporting former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson is expected to travel to Russia soon to attempt to secure the release of Griner, as well as Paul Whelan, who's been held since 2018. Brittany Griner is expected back in a Russian court on Friday. A former spokesperson for the far-right Oath Keepers is set to testify publicly on Tuesday at the next hearing of the House January 6 committee. Tuesday's hearing is expected to focus on the role of the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys in the deadly insurrection. Justice Department prosecutors have accused members of the Oath Keepers of bringing explosives to Washington, D.C., and for maintaining a death list of election officials in Georgia to target. This comes as Donald Trump's former advisor, Steve Bannon, has informed the committee he's willing to testify publicly. Bannon was due to be tried this week for contempt of Congress. On Friday, the January 6 committee spent 8 hours privately questioning former White House counsel Pat Cipollone. One member of the committee, Democrat Zoe Lofgren, said Cipollone did not contradict the testimony of previous witnesses. In other election news, Wisconsin Supreme Court has barred the use of absentee ballot drop boxes anywhere in the state outside of election offices. In her dissent, Wisconsin Justice Ann Walsh Bradley wrote, quote, "The majority lead opinion blithely and erroneously seeks to sow distrust in the administration of our elections and through its faulty analysis erects yet another barrier for voters to exercise this sacred right." The Biden administration is facing pressure to scrap plans to build a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem after a Palestinian legal group revealed the proposed embassy is located on land that was illegally confiscated by Israel from Palestinians in 1948. The historical documents were made public by the Palestinian legal group Adala ahead of President Biden's trip this week to Israel and the occupied West Bank. The group's legal director, Suhad Bashara, said, quote, "This plan is a serious escalation in U.S. legitimization of Israeli expropriation of land from Palestinians. If the Biden administration doesn't abandon it, then there is no other way to interpret the move than siding with Israel's racist policies," unquote. President Biden's looking into possibly declaring a public health emergency to expand abortion access after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Biden was asked about the issue Sunday while taking questions ahead of a bike ride.
One of the things they are asking for is a public health emergency. Is that something you're considering?
That's something I'm asked the medical people on the administration can look at, whether I have the authority to do that and what impact that would have. Okay?
Biden's comments came on the same day as some 10,000 reproductive rights activists rallied in Washington to urge the administration and lawmakers to do more to protect abortion.
We're demanding that the federal government do something to legalize abortion now, that waiting till November is not enough.
On Friday, President Biden signed an executive order to ensure access to abortion medication and emergency contraception while urging Congress to pass legislation to codify abortion rights. The White House has defended Biden's response so far to the Supreme Court ruling. Outgoing White House Communications Director Kate Bedingfield said in a statement Saturday, quote, Joe Biden's goal in responding to Dobbs is not to satisfy some activists who have been consistently out of step with the mainstream of the Democratic Party, unquote. Meanwhile, Louisiana has become the 10th state to ban almost all abortions following the Supreme Court's ruling. On Friday, a judge in Louisiana lifted a temporary stay on the state's trigger law from going into effect. Environmental and indigenous groups are expressing concern the Biden administration may approve a massive oil and gas development in northern Alaska known as the Willow Project. On Friday, the Biden administration issued a new environmental analysis for ConocoPhillips' multi-billion-dollar plan. One key backer of the project, Republican Alaskan Senator Lisa Murkowski, said she hopes construction can begin this winter. Kristen Miller, conservation director of the Alaska Wilderness League, said, quote, if approved, the Willow Project would be bigger than any other proposed oil and gas project on our nation's public lands, and it poses an unparalleled climate and biodiversity threat that puts President Biden's climate legacy at risk, she said. In California, a fire near Yosemite National Park has grown to over 1,600 acres. It's threatening the park's Mariposa Grove, which is the home to over 500 giant sequoia trees. As of Sunday, the fire was 0% contained. Meanwhile, in Utah, the Halfway Hill Fire has grown to nearly 8,000 acres. Deforestation in the Amazon in Brazil has reached a new record during the first half of the year. According to the Brazilian Space Agency, nearly 4,000 square kilometers have been deforested this year. That's an area five times the size of New York City. Deforestation has surged under the right-wing presidency of Jair Bolsonaro. This is Manuela Machado, a wildfire and deforestation researcher at Oxford University.
This is very bad. The first semester in the Amazon is when we have the rainy season, so we shouldn't be seeing these high numbers. This historically is not the peak of deforestation, shouldn't be happening while it's raining. So we have a combination of a drier climate with more motivation to deforest. So this is extremely bad news.
Scientists say preserving the Amazon is crucial to addressing the climate catastrophe. In other news from Brazil, a supporter of Bolsonaro shot dead a local official of Brazil's opposition Workers' Party on Saturday. The attacker reportedly shouted words of praise for Bolsonaro as he shot Marcela Arruda, who was at a party celebrating his birthday. The Workers' Party is led by former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who's running against Bolsonaro in this year's presidential election. In business news, the world's richest man, Elon Musk, has notified Twitter he wants to withdraw from a $44 billion deal to buy the social media company. Twitter's board, which initially opposed Musk's purchase, is expected to sue Musk for pulling out. A major new investigation by The Guardian and the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists has revealed how Uber secretly lobbied governments and flouted laws to ruthlessly grow and expand across the globe. The probe is based on 124,000 leaked internal documents, including many from France, which show how Emmanuel Macron signed a secret deal when he was the French economy minister to help Uber's lobbying efforts. The leaked documents also show Uber helped evade government regulators by using a, quote, kill switch during raids to prevent police from obtaining internal data. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, a 15-year-old black teenager named Brett Rosenau died Thursday from smoke inhalation after a police SWAT team fired multiple rounds of munitions into a house during a standoff targeting another individual. Authorities are investigating whether police officers started the house fire by firing tear gas canisters into the home. The target of the SWAT team escaped the fire and has been hospitalized with burn wounds. and in South Africa. At least 15 people have died in a mass shooting at a bar in Soweto Township in Johannesburg. 9 people were critically injured. There are reports a group of men carried out the attack. 4 other people died Saturday in a separate shooting at another tavern in the South African city of Pietermaritzburg. The incidents came just weeks after 21 South African teenagers died under mysterious circumstances at a bar in the city of East London. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, Gabby Giffords won't back down. Today, as mass shootings continue to rock the country, we look at a new film premiering across the country this week, following the former Arizona congresswoman as she fights to recover from the attempted assassination in 2011 and emerges as one of the most effective activists in the U.S. battle against gun violence. Stay with us. Back Down by Tom Petty, the theme song of the film we'll spend the hour on today. Gabby Giffords won't back down. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, President Biden's hosting an event at the White House with victims of gun violence to mark the signing of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, a new law meant to reduce gun violence. The measure was inspired in part by the mass shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas, and was soon overshadowed by yet another mass shooting when a gunman in Highland Park, Illinois, killed 7 people at a July 4th parade. Today's White House event includes survivors and family members of more than 10 high-profile mass shootings. The new bill will incrementally strengthen requirements for young people to buy guns, denies firearms to more domestic abusers, and helps local police remove weapons from people considered dangerous. Well, today, as mass shootings continue to rock the country, we spend the hour looking at a new film premiering across the country in more than 200 movie theaters. It follows former Arizona Congresswoman Gabby Giffords as she fights to recover from an attempted assassination in January of 2011 and emerges as one of the most effective activists in the U.S. battle against gun violence. This is the trailer for Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down.
All right, ready? I'm running for Congress.
There is no turning it around at this point. You've won.
Joining us now is Representative Gabrielle Giffords.
Gabby was a star.
If an idea is a good idea, it's a good idea.
Your fiancé, Mark Kelly, who is who?
He's an astronaut.
I was the commander of Space Shuttle Endeavor at the time. Gabby knew the risk involved. Turns out she had the risky job.
Congresswoman Giffords was the target of the mass shooting.
I have just come from the University Medical Center, where our friend Gabby courageously fights to recover.
Typically, with an injury to the brain with a gunshot wound, it's less than 10% that they would even survive.
She's beginning several months of rehab.
Give me 2 fingers.
All right.
Give me 5.
Gabby suffered from aphasia, which is a language impairment.
Answer that.
You are not allowed to quit on me. Right. Look at you.
Good news about Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. She was discharged today from the hospital.
She
She said, the people who elected me need someone who can give them 100%.
Gotta step down. Work to do. Work.
It's a very unique way of communicating with facial expression, touch, and her love. It's a gift.
She laughs at my jokes, even when they're bad.
Funny. Funny.
This is the model that they built the plate out of. Does that look about right?
The words are there in my brain. I just can't get them out.
Gabby Giffords making her way back to the Capitol.
Too many children are dying. Too many children. We must do something.
Nobody could have been more compelling than Gabby was that day.
Love to talk. I'm Gabby.
The trailer for Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down. For more, we spend the hour looking at her remarkable story with the film's directors, Julie Cohen and Betsy West. They follow the former Arizona congresswoman as she fights to recover from her attempted assassination on January 8, 2011, when she and 18 others were shot during a constituent meeting held in a supermarket parking lot in Arizona. In Casas Adobes, in the Tucson metropolitan area. In a remarkable story, she went on to emerge as one of the most effective activists in the U.S. battle against gun violence. In fact, former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords received the Presidential Medal of Freedom at the White House last Thursday for her work. This is President Biden.
Proof that we'll not grow numb to the epidemic of gun violence in this nation. Proof that we can channel the pain and sorrow we see too often in America into a movement that will prevail. With her husband, United States Senator Mark Kelly, who, by the way, was that astronaut you all remember, she is more consequential, I acknowledge.
Yes, that's President Biden awarding the Medal of Freedom to Gabby Giffords, the subject of Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down. We're joined right now by the directors of the film, Julie Cohen and Betsy West. They've made many award-winning documentaries together, including Julia, about Julia Child, My Name is Pauli Murray, and the Academy Award-nominated film, RBG. Julie and Betsy, welcome back to Democracy Now! What a moment to be focusing on the life of Gabby Giffords in the midst of this horrendous, continued wave of mass shootings across the country. Take us back to January 8th, 2011, Julie, and talk about why Gabby Giffords was in this parking lot and what happened next.
Yeah, you know, this was a meet and greet with constituents. Gabby was then Congresswoman Giffords was very much a go out to the people, meet with constituents, hear what's on their minds. Both Democrats and Republicans were at this event to ask questions and just kind of get an update for the congresswoman who at that time had just been reelected for her third term. When a gunman emerged, it's a morning event, just emerged and shot Gabby pretty much point blank right in the brain, and also opened fire on a crowd of people, killing six of them and injuring Gabby plus 12 more. An absolutely horrendous mass shooting, and one that rendered Gabby initially in the hospital in a medically induced coma. Unclear at first, is she going to survive? And then once she was pulled through, what will her life be? Will she ever be able to walk again or talk again? And our film sort of picks up when she's in the hospital and shows with the remarkable assist from Mark Kelly, who had some cinematography training as an astronaut and had the very good sense to set up a camera in the hospital to kind of give you just this remarkable inside view of every moment of this heroic and epic recovery and the fight that this woman has had to come back herself and then to come back as a public figure fighting to try to do something about the epidemic of gun violence in our country.
I wanted to go back to that moment because right after she was shot and a number of people killed, we interviewed Daniel Hernandez. Then he was 20 years old. He was an intern for Gabby, who was credited with likely saving Gifford's life immediately after the shooting that again left six people dead and 20 wounded. Daniel, welcome to Democracy Now! Why don't you describe what you did Saturday morning? What was it, around 11 o'clock your time in the supermarket parking lot?
I'm an intern with the Congresswoman's office, and I was helping with an event called Congress on Your Corner, where the Congresswoman had the opportunity to speak with her constituents one-on-one. I think that's one of the things that I've always admired about Gabby, that she took the time out to really listen to her constituents. And she always said, representative is not a job title, it's a job description. So we were doing this event, and about 10 a.m., we started off. I was in charge of controlling traffic and signing people in about 10 minutes into the event. So about 10:10, the first shots were fired. When the first shots were fired, the first thought that came into my head was, if there is a gunman, Gabby's likely to be a target, and anyone around her is likely to get injured. So I then ran towards where I knew the Congresswoman would be, because I was at the end of the line signing people in. When I got there, I noticed there were a few people who had been injured. So I started checking for pulses, and I started checking to see who was still breathing. The first rule of triage is you find out who's stable enough, get them the help that they need, and then you move on. But I was only able to get to two or three people. Unfortunately, before I noticed that the Congresswoman had been hit, she had been hit in the head. And because she was still breathing, she was still alert, and she was still conscious, she became my first and only priority. I then tried to do what I could for the Congresswoman. The first thing I did was lift her up, because in the position she was in, there was some risk of asphyxiation because there was blood loss and she was starting to inhale some of her own blood. So I picked her up and I set her in an upright position, propped up against my chest so that she could breathe properly. I then started looking for other wounds. There was only the one obvious bullet wound to the head. So I started applying pressure to the wound until someone else could come in and take over who was better qualified.
That was Daniel Hernandez. He was 20 years old and interned for a few days at the time. We talked to him just a few days after the assassination attempt and the killing of six others. Betsy West, the horror of this, the youngest to die was little Christina Taylor Green. She was 9. And talk about the others.
Yeah, a federal judge, John Roll, who was a friend, a Republican and a friend of Gabby, had stepped up next to her right before the shooting started, and he was instantly killed. One of Gabby's rising, promising young staff members, Gabriel, was also shot and instantly killed. Several other bystanders who had just come to ask Gabby questions, also gunned down. It was, you know, one of the sheriff's deputies who arrived on the scene early told us how horrific it was that the bullets had gone through the glass windows of the grocery store and all the way to the back. It was horrific. Luckily, several of the bystanders were able to tackle the gunman and, you know, get the gun away from him before more damage was done. But, you know, it was very shocking. And I think we all remember in America, even those of us who didn't know who Gabby Giffords was, were just horrified by this mass shooting, which really was one of the first to grab people's attention back in 2011.
And isn't it true that Mark Kelly, who's now a senator, is an astronaut, was in Houston, hears about the shooting, the horror, and as he's flying to be with her in Arizona, he hears the media reports that she has died?
Yeah, that's right. a friend had a plane on which he was flying, and he was watching television news trying to get every ounce of information he could about what was going on with his wife. They'd only been married for a little more than 3 years at this point. You know, these romantic newlyweds, and the unimaginable happens. All he really knows is that she's been shot. And a number of news outlets, based on the chaotic situation in an incident like this, where people are hearing from people on the ground, and of course she looked extremely severely injured, so several news outlets started reporting that she had died officially. And Mark Kelly, her young husband, sees this on a news report on an airplane, is absolutely devastated by this news, and for a full half hour he thinks his wife has died, until he sees again on a news report, still on the plane, like, you know, we have some of the news reports in our film, somebody saying, oh no, wait, you can report she's alive, and yes, she's, you know, okay, she's alive in surgery. So then his plane lands, he rushes to the hospital in Tucson to see how his wife's doing and get a sense, is she going to survive and can she recover?
Now, this is truly remarkable, the video footage you have. And this film is about gun control and fighting to end the scourge in this country, alone in the world in dealing with these mass shootings, well over 300, not killings of people, but mass shootings this year alone. Far more number of people died. But it's also a story about this woman who it was believed she would absolutely die, but she doesn't. And her fight against aphasia. But let's even go before that. This is a clip from your film, Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down, of President Barack Obama, president at the time, reflecting now on seeing former Congressmember Giffords after her tragic shooting. He visits her with Michelle in the hospital in 2011.
When we heard that Gabby had been shot, we were heartbroken and scared. I already knew Gabby well, knew Mark. And when I visited with Gabby, she was out and uncommunicative.
A few minutes after we left her room and some of her colleagues from Congress were in the room, Gabby opened her eyes for the first time. Gabby opened her eyes for the first time.
Even in the darkest, most difficult times, there's always that glimmer of hope that we can cling to.
Betsy West, if you can talk more about that moment, that she opened her eyes for the first time, and also they had removed a part of her skull.
Yeah, they had removed some of her skull in order to allow the swelling of her brain and really to save her life. You know, I think that Gabby's shooting was a singular moment for Barack Obama and his young presidency. He flew to Tucson, visited Gabby, had that very emotional meeting with the Tucson community, and then really put himself behind the issue of trying to do something about gun violence. You know, when we interviewed him, you could see how much emotion there was there. I mean, former President Obama is not that generally an emotional person, but you could feel his feeling for Gabby, who he knew and really understood was a very promising rising star in the Democratic Party. I think in some ways, like Barack Obama, someone who was bipartisan, had reached across the aisle, and just was a natural politician, to see her cut down in the prime of her political career. And then, of course, 2 years later, when the Newtown shooting occurred and all those young children were killed, Barack Obama tried very hard to pass gun safety legislation, and Gabby threw herself into that effort, and it failed. He told us it was really the most disappointed and the angriest that he had ever been as president.
So You talk about Sandy Hook, and she does too. It is hard to believe that within something like with 2 years, she will be addressing Congress. But I want to turn back to a short scene from your film, Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down, showing Gabby Giffords' remarkable recovery.
I couldn't walk. I couldn't talk.
Happy birthday to
Happy birthday, dear Gabby.
Now happy I'm birthday. Giving speeches again. I'm studying for my bar mitzvah. And I'm riding my bike for 25 miles in El Tour de Tucson.
So, Julie Cohen, you can't speak in sound bites here since we have the whole show, but this recovery is truly remarkable. People hear the lighthearted singing. But if you can talk about the human brain and Gabby Giffords being shot in the left side of the brain, losing access to her ability to speak at the beginning, and why singing was such a critical part of speaking.
Yeah, so music has been a huge part of Gabby's life, her whole life. She loves to sing. She loves every kind of music, show tunes, pop music. When she was in high school, she played Annie in the school production of Annie, and she loves singing that song. She knows kind of every 80s hit, always has. But after she was shot, music kind of took on a different and more serious role in her life. Yes, you know, the language center is in one very concentrated part of the brain. But music centers are all through throughout the whole workings of your brain. So for Gabby, but also for others, music is a really good way back to language. And when they were first teaching her to speak, when the sort of expert and heroic speech pathologists that have worked with her throughout and which are actually a pretty major part of our film were teaching her how to speak again, they did it with music. You're going to hear people, you know, when you go see the film, people working with her, and they're not just teaching her to say her name again. They're giving it a little tune. My name is Gabby, or like, where are my glasses? How are you? They give everything a little tune because that allows the music center of the brain to be activated. And then that channels, allowing you to channel back into the language, using the music centers of your brain to through neuroplasticity. And I'm not a scientist here, but I'm giving in layperson's language the basic way it works, that your brain can adapt itself. And Gabby's brain did, so that the music centers of her brain learned to be activated to help her get back to language. And the remarkable thing now is, as she has recovered so much of her language ability, although it's still a struggle every day and she still works with speech pathologists quite regularly, as language recovers, singing has remained just absolutely central. And while putting together a sentence is a challenge that involves, finding all the connective words, that involves quite often a bit of work with a speech therapist, Gabby can extremely fluidly sing the words to, I don't know, hundreds or maybe thousands of song, and she really pops into song in almost any circumstance, right, Betsy?
Yeah, I mean, when we were filming, lots of times we were singing as well, because Gabby would just start up with a tune, and it really is extraordinary to learn how the brain works. As Gabby says, the brain, who knew? And I think music has not only helped Gabby get back to language, but it's also just given her a lot of joy in her life.
So, Julie, we're going to go to break, Julie and Betsy. And, Julie, can you actually introduce this YouTube break? I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Okay, so this flows right out of what Betsy was just saying. It was one of our days filming with Gabby where we had a plan that we were going to film a scene of her riding on her recumbent bike, which she does almost every day, even in Tucson, where it's often over 100. Like, she'll get up earlier in the morning so that she can ride while it's still cool enough. And we were out in her garage with her as she and one of her nurses were getting ready to go on a bike ride. And because part of her body is paralyzed, it's a little bit complicated to strap her into the recumbent bike, and she's getting ready. And it's, in some ways, it's a serious procedure, but Gabby pretty quickly went to her voice-activated, music system and said, like, 80s on 8, you know, the Sirius XM channel that plays 80s tunes. U2 starts playing, and Gabby, with just sheer, you know, sheer joy, sheer freeness, just starts belting out, still haven't found what I'm looking for. I think for Betsy and I, it was really one of the most memorable moments of filming, and really a moving one.
We're talking to Julie Cohen and Betsy West, directors of the new remarkable documentary, Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down, opening in theaters across the country on Wednesday. Let's go to that break. And when we come back, we focus on her activism against gun violence, the fact that she's testifying before Congress within a few years of doctors wondering if she would ever speak again. Still haven't found what I'm looking for by U2, favorite of Gabby Giffords. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we spend the hour with Julie Cohen and Betsy West, the directors of the new documentary, Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down, opening in theaters across the country on Wednesday, which follows Gabby Giffords as she deals with aphasia following the attempted assassination in 2011 in a parking lot in Tucson, when she was meeting with her constituent. She was the first Jewish Congress member from the state of Arizona. Now one of the most effective activists in the U.S. battle against gun violence. Today she'll be at the White House to mark this day, the celebration of the first gun legislation of significance in 30 years, though many say it's certainly not going far enough. I want to go back to another scene from Gabby Giffords Won't Back Down, where the former Congress member testifies before the Senate Judiciary Committee, a hearing on preventing gun violence in 2013. It was shortly after the Sandy Hook massacre, which took place on December 14, 2012, Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, where 26 people were killed, 20 of them children aged 5 and 6.
We have a former member of Congress here, Gabby Giffords, who's going to give a brief message. Ms. Giffords.
Thank you for inviting me here today. Speaking is difficult, but I need to say something important. Violence is a big problem. Too many children are dying. Too many children. We must do something.
That's a clip from Gabby Gifford's Won't Back Down. We're speaking to the directors Julie Cohen and Betsy West, who've made many award-winning documentaries, including Julia, about Julia Child, My Name is Pauli Murray, that just won a Columbia DuPont Award, as well as a Peabody, and the Academy Award-nominated RBG. The new film about gun control is called Gabby Gifford's Won't Back Down. Julie Cohen, if you can talk about this moment, about her testifying. Today she will be back at the White House. And again, last week she was just honored by President Biden, given a Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest award that goes to a civilian in this country.
Yes. The moment of that testimony was something that took tremendous amount of work for Gabby. That was the first time that she was going to be giving a major public address. Many people, it was about 2 years after she had been shot, and many people weren't really sure what her language ability was going to be, which is why that felt like kind of a suspenseful moment as she's sitting down to testify before the committee with Mark Kelly, her husband, not yet a senator at that point, by her side. She and her speech pathologist, Fabi Hirsch, who is kind of a major character in our film, they had started working together for the purpose of putting that speech together and had worked on it for weeks for her to perfect saying exactly what she wanted to say and then getting it down and memorizing so that she would say it correctly. And as I think you feel in the scene, really saying it with so much feeling that members of the Judiciary Committee, both Democratic and Republican, appear to be very moved, although I will add that most, if not all, of the Republicans on the committee weren't quite moved enough to vote for the legislation that she was there to endorse. Really the beginning of her enormously impactful activism and work to try to prevent gun violence in this country.
You know, I wanted to go now to the head of the center that she's established. Right after the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas in May, we spoke to Robin Lloyd, the managing director of the gun violence prevention group that's simply called Giffords, of course, named for Gabby Gifford. She co-founded the anti-gun violence group, and this is what Robin Lloyd had to say.
So here in the United States, we don't have strong gun laws at the federal level. There's very few updates to federal gun regulation in the past 20 plus years. The last kind of significant push occurred in the early 1990s. At the state level, it's a different story. Some states, like New York, have very strong gun laws, but they are still susceptible to the lax gun laws of their neighbors. And it's very easy for firearms to travel across state lines and to get into the hands of those that shouldn't have them. Other states, like Texas, have virtually no strong gun laws. Texas, unfortunately, at the Giffords Law Center, we give a letter grade rating to every state in the country. Texas has an F, which is probably not very surprising, but as you heard in the clip from Beto O'Rourke earlier, all Texas has done in recent years, despite the tragic shootings that have occurred, El Paso, Sutherland Springs, Odessa, just to name a few, they've only rolled back gun laws, and they've actually made it easier to carry concealed weapons, no questions asked, no training, no permits, no requirements whatsoever for anybody to carry a concealed firearm in Texas. So that's all they've done in recent years. They've made it easier to do that. And really, this is by design. The American Gun Lobby, which is supported by American gun manufacturers, is alive and well. The National Rifle Association, the NRA, has been weakened due to self-inflicted wounds of greed and mismanagement of funds. But other organizations like the National Shooting Sports Foundation, which is the lobbying arm for the gun industry and gun retailers, is alive and well. And actually, the National Shooting Sports Foundation spends more on lobbying against gun violence prevention measures here in Washington than the NRA does. So they're the true face of the American corporate gun lobby. And quite frankly, there's a lot of money at stake. There has been an incredible surge of gun sales in the past decade, largely driven by fear and conspiracy promulgated by the corporate gun lobby here in the United States. And that has meant an incredible increase in their bottom line.
That's Robin Lloyd, managing director of the gun violence prevention group Giffords, co-founded by former Congressmember Gabby Giffords. It is her life mission right now. Betsy West, you know, after the Buffalo shooting killed 10 African Americans, white supremacist, 18-year-old with an assault weapon, and then another 18-year-old in Uvalde that killed all of these children and their two fourth-grade teachers. Still, all they could get, but it was very significant because after 30 years, nothing was accomplished, like after Newtown, hard to believe, Sandy Hook. They couldn't get the assault weapons ban. But now with what happened in Highland Park and next to Chicago, and in fact, it's hard to believe, but July 4th, more people died of gun violence in Chicago than Highland Park. Do you think it's possible, or I should say, do you think Gabby Giffords thinks it's possible to get an assault weapons ban, something she has been fighting for years?
You know, Gabby Giffords is a very optimistic person, and I do think she thinks it's possible. I mean, she's been, ever since Sandy Hook, she has been very strategic about her work in curbing gun violence. And she takes the long view here. I mean, it has been almost 10 years since she started this organization. And as Robin said, they have had some success on the state level. Gabby's strategy is really to talk to gun owners like herself, people who, even NRA members, but people who are in favor of reasonable gun legislation. And Gabby has traveled all around the country and points to, you know, over 400 state laws, red flag laws and others, which have made some progress. Obviously, on the federal level, it's been very discouraging. Some people say that this recent legislation is very modest and doesn't really do enough. But I think Gabby would say, and those in her organization, that it is a first step. And they're hoping to keep pushing. I mean, I want to just say one other thing is, you know, last year we were with Gabby when her organization set up an installation in Washington to memorialize the 40,000 people who die every year in this country of gun violence. And that's just not just from mass shootings. This is from one-on-one shootings and, you know, from other incidents and, of course, suicides. Over 40,000 people last year. And this year, the number is 45,000 people. So it's a huge problem. And one that, you know, Gabby is really determined to tackle. I mean, she's just somebody who doesn't get discouraged. She's just keep on pushing.
Julie, you have been following Gabby Giffords now for a few years. Talk about how you first decided to make this film.
Yeah. So we were introduced to Gabby by a producer named Lisa Erstbommer, one of the producers of our film, along with Sam Janishian. And Lisa had the thought that the combination of us and Gabby might really make for a pretty amazing documentary. So she set up a Zoom call with us. This is at the very beginning of COVID. And we had a conversation with Gabby and then Senate candidate Mark Kelly about their lives, thinking, you know, is this someone, can we make a full feature film about someone when language is such a struggle and a challenge? Those concerns I would say, were alleviated pretty quickly by the forceful personality of Gabby herself, who lifted her foot. I'm not going to do the gymnastics required to put my foot by your camera, but who lifted her foot directly to the camera of the Zoom to show us that she was wearing RBG socks. She's a connector with and without words, and that was just indicative, you know, within about, you know, a minute and a half of this Zoom call starting, Betsy and I were texting each other like, yes, like we are making this film.
Speaking of RBG, let's not forget, I mean, Gabby Giffords not only works on the issue of gun violence. The Supreme Court has just lifted a gun ban based here in New York, making it easier for people to get guns at this unbelievable, horrific point in U.S. history. But, of course, also overturned Roe v. Wade. What, Julie, was Gabby Giffords' response to that?
So Gabby, you know, like a lot of progressive politicians and humans, has been a strongly pro-choice person for years. We happened to see Gabby on the day that the Alito, the draft opinion was released of Dobbs, giving a sense that of the rollback that was about to happen. Gabby, despite struggling to speak, is often incredible with language and came sort of running up at an event that we had come to a bit early and just said, you know, with something really that she wanted to, that she really wanted to express, and just said, Roe versus Wade, 50 years, backwards, backwards. And of all the conversations that I had with people that day, I felt like Gabby expressed the most eloquently what the stakes were and what we were about to lose in this country.
And interestingly, you did the documentary, the two of you did the documentary, Julia, that aired on CNN. And one of the things you focus on, Julia Child, right, the world-renowned chef, but she used her celebrity to support Planned Parenthood and reproductive rights. But I wanted to go at the end of this hour with you two to go to My Name is Pauli Murray and talk about it premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. We had a long discussion at the time about it, a whole show. It's gone on to win a Peabody and a DuPont, the film about one of the most pivotal figures in history, Pauli Murray, a trailblazing black queer feminist poet, lawyer, and legal scholar and priest who was discriminated against from childhood because of their race or gender or both, went on to question systems of oppression and conformity with a radical vision ahead of their time that influenced landmark civil rights decisions, influenced RBG, influenced Thurgood Marshall. I just wanted to play a clip for the trailer of My Name is Pauli Murray.
There are some people who now argue that you cannot teach American history without teaching about Pauli Murray.
Pauli was a writer, a lawyer, a priest, a poet.
Pauli was a feisty woman.
My name is Pauli Murray. My whole history has been a struggle in a society dominated by the ideas that blacks were inferior to whites and women were inferior to men.
Pauli was way ahead of the times.
I chose for my senior paper, should Plessy versus Ferguson be overruled?
My little argument went to the Supreme Court.
Y'all see all of the different folks that are in this room? That is made possible by Pauli Murray.
If you rip away everything, oppression is the business of not respecting one's personhood.
For my first 2 years, I was the only woman in the law school. They didn't even let me talk.
Thurgood Marshall is talking about Jim Crow, and she says, what I'm experiencing is Jane Crow.
Murray was not just an amazing lawyer or a badass feminist, but also a queer, non-binary person.
Sitting in front of Murray's notes,
the turmoil and the suffering,
this is a feeling I know well.
Scholars who have written about Pauli largely still use feminine pronouns. I don't know what pronouns Pauli would say.
Trans and gender non-binary people have always been a part of our American context. So did y'all just think that your generation invented it?
That's a part of the trailer for My Name is Pauli Murray. And Julie Cohen, as we wrap up, and for both of you, your remarkable body of work, if you can comment, since the film, what has happened with awareness around Pauli Murray in this country?
I'd say awareness of Pauli, which was growing already. That's part of what we were trying to document in our film and has been something forwarded by scholars, particularly Black women scholars, for many decades. But awareness is growing more. And Betsy and I have been thrilled, and so has Pauli Murray's family, to see the name get a little bit of the recognition that it so richly deserved.
We want to thank you both for being with us. We have to leave it there, but I encourage people to go to the hour we had speaking about Pauli Murray. Julie Cohen and Betsy West, directors of Gabby Giffords, won't back down.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, Michael Smith will interview me about how and why the Supreme Court has outlawed the constitutional right to abortion.
This is a tremendous blow to the liberty of American citizens, and let's get to the details of it. Give a listen. We'll also speak with union activist Joshua DeVries, who attended last month's annual Labor Notes conference in Chicago. It was quite an event. Listen to this. It's an important strategy.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian.
And I am attorney Marjorie Cohn, professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and regular columnist for truthout.org.
Since Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973, its opponents have mounted a sustained effort to overturn it. The Heritage Foundation and the Federalist Society, which is funded largely with untraceable dark money by wealthy right-wingers, climate-damaging industries, and conservative think tanks, compiled lists of anti-choice judges. Samuel Alito, one of those judges, was helped to his seat on the court by Leonard Leo, a former executive vice president of the Federalist Society. It was Samuel Alito who wrote the majority opinion overturning the right to abortion. The same funding sources power the Attorney General's Association, which is made up of 27 right-wing attorney generals in the various states. The attorneys general bring their lawsuits in front of sympathetic judges whose appointments were secured by the same entities that support them. Donald Trump drew his three Supreme Court nominees, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Comey Barrett, from those lists. In spite of their promises to adhere to stare decisis, which means respect for the court's previous decisions, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett all voted to overturn Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which reaffirmed the central holding of Roe in 1992. On June 24, five right-wing Christian zealots on the court ruled in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization that abortion is no longer a fundamental constitutional right. Samuel Alito wrote the majority opinion, and Clarence Thomas joined it as well. Chief Justice John Roberts did not vote to overturn Roe and Casey. Alito's draft opinion, which was leaked to Politico in May, largely became the majority opinion in Dobbs. After an oral argument in December, Alito, Thomas, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett indicated in a straw poll that they were inclined to overturn Roe and Casey. And although we knew that the court would likely erase the right to abortion, it still came as a shock when they actually did it in the Dobbs case. We're joined today by our own co-host, Marjorie Cohn, who has written extensively about the Supreme Court and reproductive rights, predicting in several articles that the Supreme Court would overrule Roe versus Wade and Casey. Marjorie is a former criminal defense attorney, professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, and the past president of the National Lawyers Guild. She has published several books, and she writes a regular column for Truthout. Marjorie, welcome to the guest chair on Law and Disorder.
I'm glad to be here with you, Michael.
Marjorie, what did Roe versus Wade